ساتھی قریب قریب آ جائے، جو حضرت نفل پڑھ رہے ہیں ان کا خیال رکھیں. بسم اللہ الرحمن الرحیم، نحمده ونصلی علی رسوله الکریم، اما بعد. السلام علیکم ورحمۃ اللہ تعالی وبرکاتہ. Brothers are requested to come close. Those who are planning to sit, come close inshallah. The topic for today is Islamic finance. And Islamic finance is a huge, very broad topic. So I am going to just outline a few concepts, and then we will go straight into the questions, because there are approximately 76 questions here. Some of them are repeats, so we'll see how it goes, inshallah. I can carry on until midnight. But whenever you feel tired, then just show me the red card. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has set out rules and regulations regarding money, regarding finances. And Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala's rules and regulations in relation to finances, but not just finances, in relation to all aspects of life, are intertwined with justice. Intertwined with justice. Today there is injustice all over the world as a result of many reasons, one of them being the economic and financial system. So, an Islamic economic system is neither capitalism in its full form, neither communism and socialism in its full form, somewhere in between, where the human being has the freedom, the liberty to earn as much as he wants to. He can be a millionaire, but within a particular framework with certain rules and regulations to avoid injustice, to avoid oppression, to avoid unfairness, to ensure that everything is equitable and fair. But Islam recognizes that some people will be rich, some people will be poor, some people will have a business mindset, some people will not have a mindset, some people will put in more effort, some people will put in less effort. So Islam is a very realistic religion and has a very realistic ideology. It's not unrealistic like socialism, where everybody should be equal and everybody should be the same and everybody should earn the same, which was tested and tried. And on the other hand, it's not even totally unlimited, as it is in capitalism, that you can do whatever you want. You are totally free, totally liberal. Do what you want, eat what you want. So, somewhere in between. This is at the heart of the Islamic economic system. And as part of this, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has decided that zakat has to be given. And zakat has been kept minimal, only 2.5%. When I say this, some people say, well, if I have 100 million pounds, that's 2.5 million pounds. That's huge. But what about the 97.5 million that you've got? Isn't that huge? That's humongous. So 2.5%, 1/40. And even that is not in everything. That is not in everything that a person owns. That is in five things. The zakatable assets. Gold, silver. Why gold and silver? Because gold and silver historically has always been currency. And even today, especially gold, the value is growing. 3-4 years ago, 1 gram of gold was 40 pounds. Nazir Bhai will know, today it is 74 pounds. So, it has within it the intrinsic ability to grow, and it doesn't depreciate normally. So gold, silver, currency. Nowadays we have currencies, which in itself, it's a whole topic in its own right. I don't want to discuss that today. But currencies are gold and silver. We don't use anymore as a medium of exchange. We use pound, we use dollar, we use rupee. So currencies are also zakatable assets. That's number three. Number four, business stock, business assets. Anything that you have purchased with the intention to sell. Anything that you have purchased with the intention to sell. You have to give zakat. How do you give zakat? 1/40 of the item or its value. So if you have a clothes shop, from every 40, you give one. Or you give its value. And number five, animals. Animals, because animals also grow. You have two goats, they become four, then they become six, they become ten, they grow. Now, animals, we don't need to worry too much about animals, and the rules regarding the zakat of animals are also very, I wouldn't say complicated, but very detailed and very different. But we don't need to worry about that too much, because I don't think we have many farmers here. And if we do, then we probably don't have that many animals that reach the threshold. So that's it. 2.5% in a person's wealth, zakat. And in addition to that, we have small, two, three small other things where some financial obligation is necessary. Like we have the Sadaqatul Fitr, £5 per person, including the children, which is given on Eid Day. And to be honest, it should be given before Eid Day so that it reaches the poor by Eid Day. That is the philosophy behind Sadaqatul Fitr. People leave it till the last day. And many masjids, they hoard the money for months and months and months. So Sadaqatul Fitr should be given now, so that it reaches the poor by Eid Day. That is the philosophy of Sadaqatul Fitr. Nominal amount. Then we have the Udhiya, the Qurbani. And then we may have certain obligations towards family members, towards our wives, towards our children, towards our parents, towards neighbors, towards relatives. Some other financial obligations. But in principle, the most important is zakat. That is one thing that I wanted to mention as a starting point, because there are many, many questions regarding zakat, and we will come back to this. The other thing, the other point that I just want to touch upon before we move on to the questions is, this is in relation to spending, but an important point about earning. Important point about earning. There's many questions in here about what's the difference between interest and business. What about this? What about this scheme? What about that scheme? So fundamentally what we have to remember is that in Islam we have what's called the profit, the risk of profit and loss. Profit and loss share. What that means is that you can't be greedy. There is no such thing in Islam as guaranteed profit. If the profit is guaranteed, then that is interest. If any profit is guaranteed, then that is one form of interest. One interest is that you give somebody £1,000 and you say that I'm giving it to you as a loan for 6 months, but when you give it back to me, you have to give me £1,200. Haram, not allowed. You can't profit on qarz. Why? Because it's guaranteed. When you give somebody a qarz, qarz hasana, he has to give it back to you, irrespective of what happens. But if you do business with somebody, you say to Nazir Bhai, you say to Maulana here, that I'm giving you £1,000 for business. Whatever profit we make, 50-50 for example, or 60-40, whatever is agreed, percentage is agreed. Now there's a risk that he might lose out. Something might happen. He might not make as much profit. So now you are sharing the risk of profit and loss. You can't say to him that, no, but I want the 1,000 pounds, you have to give it back to me. No, no. If you're doing business, then you can't. Then it will become interest. Because you are making a stipulation that guaranteed return. So remember this one principle, that wherever there is guaranteed profit. Now sometimes the risk will be very low, and somebody might say to you, 99.99999%, inshallah you'll get your profit. Okay? The risk is absolutely minimal. That's okay, because the risk is still there. Like today, what happened at London Heathrow? If you'd asked anybody 2 days ago that do you envisage let's buy some shares in London Heathrow Airport, and 99.999%, nothing's going to happen. It's always a profit. The airline industry is booming. But it happened. The risk is there. So as long as that, even that 0.1% risk is taken, then that is business. Sometimes you'll have more risk, sometimes you'll have less risk. It happened. That is the nature of the world. Nobody envisaged, if you had asked anybody to put a bet 2 days ago that Heathrow will close for 12 hours, 15 hours, and hundreds of flights will be cancelled, thousands of passengers will be stranded just because of some electricity issue, nobody would have believed it. So that is the point of risk. Some people say, well, what is the point of risk? It's 99.99%. That is the point of risk. So that is the difference between business, halal investment. So if you understood this concept, then many, 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 many questions will be answered. For example, about Ponzi schemes, guaranteed profit. Some Dubai property, guaranteed profit. Some this, guaranteed profit. Haram, it's not jais. Anybody who does this, you know, sometimes, unfortunately, sometimes religious people also get tangled into this. Sometimes it's naivety, sometimes greed, sometimes other reasons. Guarantee, 100% guaranteed profit, haram. If you want 100% guarantee, then the only thing you can do is give your money as qarz-e hasana, and you will get your money back. Or give gold as qarz-e hasana, you will get your gold back. The price of that gold most probably will increase, but might decrease. You have to take that risk. That is one thing about investments. Number two is a principle in life. If it's too good to be true, you know, this last year or the year before, there was this ITP. I did a bayan about it in Jami Masjid as well. I tweeted about it before it went bankrupt. And people said to me, Maulana, you're losing out. A few clicks on the computer. You just have to log in every day on the app or on your desktop, and a few clicks. And when I did the calculation, it was like, I think $500 becoming $400,000 in 1 year. So I say, explain to people that, are these banks and these millionaires and these people who are working so hard in running businesses, are they stupid? Why don't they just put all their money into this ITP Corp? And every year some new scheme comes. Before that there was Banner's Brokers, I remember. Then there was this utility one that people were going after. Now, hard-earned money of people, why squander it? Yes, we all want more money. We all want our money to grow. We all want a good lifestyle. But people said to me, no, Maulana, we've put in 10 and we've got 20. And you can withdraw the money as well. I said, absolutely you can. That's how they build confidence. You put money in, then they give you money. Then you put more money in, they give you more money. Then now you take money from your relatives. Now you take money from your neighbors. And you convince others. And you put more money. And then you put more money. And then eventually it goes bankrupt. In December, when it happened in 2023, Some people were trying to withdraw. I had warned about it in October. The tweet is still on my Twitter. And many people phoned me, but this Maulana is saying is halal, and this Maulana is saying is jais, and this Maulana from this, working at this company, and all the Maulanas are doing this. I said, doesn't matter. The masla does not change because of what a Maulana might be doing, or what a Maulana might not be doing. And my job is to tell you the masala, and not only tell you the masala, but to preserve the wealth of the ordinary person. Because the clever one will put in money and take his money out, but the average person will lose out. And anybody who's earned any money from a Ponzi scheme or from a haram investment scheme, that profit is haram for him. Because it's not anybody, it's not real money, it's not real profit. It's just money that rotates. So if you've lost money and you've made money, you've not made any money. And the company has not made any money. They've just used his money and give it to you. So is that halal for you? It's not halal for you. So therefore, if it's too good to be true, then be extremely cautious. This is something that we all need to remember. If it's a 5% profit, 10% profit, 15% profit, genuine, reasonable, understandable, fair enough. But somebody's saying 100%, 200%, 300%, 600%, then you just know that there's something wrong. So remember this. And sometimes it might appear to be, everything might appear to be okay. And a mufti might even say to you, well, technically it looks okay. But sometimes we need to use common sense. And I'm amazed at people. Greed, that's the only explanation. Allah forgive us all, that's the only explanation. When it happened, then people messaged me that we're trying to withdraw our money, but it's not coming. And they're saying, there's some technical problem. I said, you're not going to get a penny. Finish now. It's finished. It's over. You're not going to get... He said, no, but it's showing on my statement. I said, it can show anything. That's it now. It's finished. They said, no, but we're still trying. I said, you can keep on trying. It's finished now. It's over. And that's it. Finished. Everything gone. People lost tens of thousands of pounds. Before that, I remember a few years ago, there was the Banner's Broker scheme. And generally, you get an idea after some time, it collapses. Sometimes a year, sometimes 18 months. A musalli came to me in Masjid al-Sajideen. I still remember by the stairs where the notice board is. And said to me that, Maulana, what do you think about Banner's Brokers? I'm thinking of putting in some money. I said, don't. So he said, but so-and-so Maulana and so-and-so Hafisa. And everybody's into it, and teachers at the Al Lumberia into it, and this person and that person. I said, look, it's up to you. But I am telling you, don't. And I know many people who are doing it, and I know people who've made a lot of money out of it as well. But don't. And 2 months later, he came to me and said, Maulana, only if I had listened to you. Only if I had listened to you. I said, well, it was your decision. So anyway, so graft, work hard, set up a business, buy some properties for rental, buy shares in genuine companies, no problem if you're into shares. Do real business, do real work. Don't go after quick money. Whether it's drugs, whether it's these Ponzi schemes, in the end, you will lose your money. And even if you think that you are smart and you won't lose your money, you'll end up eating somebody else's money. So these were just some points that came to my mind, which also explain the principle of doing business. Profit and loss share. So anybody who comes to you and says guaranteed profit, 100% profit. No, there's no such thing in Islam as 100% profit. It's haram, it's not jais. And then if you enter into such a deal with somebody, and the scheme collapses, then you cannot demand the money because the shart becomes batil. The condition of guarantee becomes batil. If that person was negligent, then that's a separate matter. You might be able to put a claim. Then there's detailed masail behind it. Okay, let's now go on to the questions. Cryptocurrencies, Bitcoin, Ethereum, are they permissible or not permissible? Now, Muftis have two views regarding this. Some muftis say it's okay. Some muftis say it's not okay. We wrote a fatwa about this a few years ago, maybe 2018 or 2017, and we said we're not convinced. We think it's not jais. And even now, I strongly discourage Bitcoin. I'm not saying it's not jais, because there are many senior muftis who are saying now that it's jais, but there are also many senior ones who are saying it's not jais. But I am not convinced, personally. I've had muftis come to me to try to explain to me the whole mechanics and how it works and everything, but I am yet to be convinced. Yes, if the governments, if the UK government, the US government, if they adopt it as a currency and they give it legal recognition, then the situation might change, the mas'ala might change, then it could be a separate matter. But as of now, I am yet to be convinced regarding this. Now, if somebody has Bitcoin and they've made money out of it based on the fatwa of those who say that it's permissible, then it's okay. But I would not encourage anybody to go into Bitcoin. It's a very... And people who've made money have made lots of money. Now the question is whether that's going to continue as well or not. Allah knows best. Is it permissible to take student loans in non-Muslim countries where Islamic alternatives are not available? There's a few questions on student loans. Student loan is interest-based. That is the starting point. And interest is haram. Interest-based transactions are haram. Unless there is a very exceptional, compelling need, then something that might not be permissible could be excused based on need. Now, some people argue that there is a need and therefore it should be excused based on need. But my position on this is that, yes, there is a need to educate our children and to educate our future generation. We don't want everybody, not everybody is going to do business. If somebody is into business, mashallah, fantastic, very good. But the majority of the workforce in the UK, the majority of our jobs is service-based. So we do need our future generation to have degrees. I'm not one to oppose that. But when that is the case, then instead of the solution to this is not interest-based loans. The solution to this is that we use zakat for the education of for the dini and dunyawi education of our future generations. What do I mean by that? For example, mashallah, we give zakat to all over the world, and we should continue doing so, whether it is Palestine, whether it is India. We give to madaris, we give to Darul Ulooms. We also give zakat abroad for higher education programs, like Akal Kuwa in India. We give them zakat to make poor people doctors, MBBS and others. Mashallah, very good. We need to do the same for our future generation here. Somebody cannot afford the fees. They are now in debt of £10,000, £12,000. They are eligible to receive zakat. So if you are a relative, if you are a cousin, if you are a neighbor, and you know that somebody is in debt now as a result of this, save them from the musibat of interest, which will keep them in debt for so many years. This whole system is a system of slavery. Don't think that just because it looks professional and people are in tie and suit that somehow this is the peak of civilization and this is somehow... No, it's all rubbish. It's nothing. So this is the Islamic system. Because Qarḍ-e Hasana is very difficult. If somebody gives you Qarḍ-e Hasana for this, then very good. Otherwise, we should use zakat for this. Somebody is in debt. Nowadays, people struggle. Somebody has 4 or 5 children and he wants to educate them in a Darul Uloom. Fees are £3,000. Now there's VAT. So £3,500, £4,000, few children, £16,000, £20,000. How is he going to afford it? So the solution is, now he's in debt. Somebody who's in debt and whose debt outweighs his zakatable assets and his other assets beyond his needs, then he's eligible to receive zakat. But then that person should live a modest life. You don't want to be taking zakat and then also holidaying every year and being extravagant in your spending. So live modestly until you are in debt or until you are taking that money. So that is the solution. We have Qarad Hasana. In Islamic country, you have awqaf as well. We don't really have awqaf here. But so practically, it would be zakat and Qarad Hasana and part-time job. If you can, that would be the solution. Now, obviously, if somebody cannot do that and they've taken a student loan, that I don't advocate it, but they've taken it, then do istighfar from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and pay it off as soon as possible. Don't just pay the minimum. Student loan, because they have this system where you just pay the minimum and you keep on paying for 10, 15, 20 years, no. As soon as you start working, as soon as you are able to pay, make lump sum payments. Take off the musibat of riba. Riba, interest is removes barakah, it removes blessings. I know people who are senior accountants and senior professionals. They've been working for 20 years, 30 years, been working really, really hard. But when I ask them, and they have a good salary as well, but when I ask them that, is your house mortgage free? No, it's not mortgage free. And the person's been working 20 years, 30 years, and always complaining, because the barakat is not there. So this is why I strongly discourage mortgage and student loans, because it removes the blessing. So, but if you've taken it because you couldn't get the Qarad Hasana, or you couldn't get the zakat, or you couldn't get the support, now you've taken it, do istighfar always. Have remorse. And then pay it off as soon as possible. Make the lump sum payments. Don't go into holiday every year. Don't spend unnecessarily. Make the lump sum payments. And then Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala also makes it easy, inshallah. But I appreciate that it is a problem. When I went to university, the fees were £3,000. And for low-income families, the council would also give some grant. So yeah, it was easy. Now 9,000, 10,000 over 3-4 years becomes 40, 50,000. But for family members, relatives, if you know you have a nephew, you have a niece, they need fees, they need money, you can give them zakat. You don't even have to mention that it's zakat. When you give zakat to somebody, you don't have to say that it's zakat. You can say it's a gift, but your intention must be that it's zakat. And obviously, if you give it to a family member, then it's not appropriate to say that it's zakat. Give it to them as a gift. You can even give it to them and say that it's a loan. But your intention, you can't change your intention after. But if your intention then is that I'm not going to take it back from him, this is zakat, but I'm just giving it to him as a loan so that he doesn't take it for granted. He appreciates it. He works hard. And then the day he comes to me to say, here, this is your £10,000, you say, beta, this is hadiah for you. Your zakat will be fulfilled. You can give zakat and say it's a loan as well. As long as your intention at that point is zakat and not to take it back. So these are things, these are masail to note. But definitely, we should help. Likewise, people for us, house mortgage. So again, somebody's in debt. We can give them zakat. And we should give zakat to family members who for their first homes. Because nowadays it's a real big struggle. So rather than them taking interest-based mortgages, give them zakat and save them from the musibat of interest. But at the same time, they should live modestly as well. And then inshallah, they should help others. And if everybody does this, then inshallah, we can go a long way and we can move forward. The government is also, there was some statement last year that they are introducing some kind of a takaful based and some model. Allah knows best what's happened regarding it. There's a question here about buy now, pay later, after pay, and I don't know how to pronounce this, Klarna or Klarna. I don't really know much about these two schemes, so I can't really comment on these at this stage. Whoever has asked, contact me after, and inshallah it needs looking into, because I just quickly looked at it. Some people are saying it's allowed if it's not interest-based, and some people are saying it's not allowed altogether because they take some fee on the hawala. So I don't know the answer to that. Is my income halal if I'm working for a bank, financial service company, or asset management as a tech or IT person? So if you are working as a, not in the interest-based, not in the transactions, you are working in a support role like an IT person, or in some other support role where you're not involved in the transactions, then your income is halal. But it's disliked. Income is halal, disliked. So, what to do? Don't leave your job. carry on working there, but start applying for other jobs in other companies where generally the majority is halal. It's next to impossible nowadays to get something 100% halal in the corporate and public sector. But majority is halal. Work in the council, work for the NHS, work for the Royal Mail, work for... So apply, start applying and have that intention. And then as soon as you get the job, you move. Because you don't want to leave, because the risk of unemployment and the harms that arise from it, the disadvantages, then will be much difficult to cope with. And it's not haram, as I said. But start applying for the jobs and then quickly try and move out. Yes. So, I can't answer every scenario, but just two, three principles to remember is that there are certain jobs that will be categorically haram. Okay? For example, you are buying and selling alcohol. That's your dominant job. That's your dominant job. If you are just a cashier at Tesco, predominantly selling halal, there might be a few items here and there that are haram. But you are working in an alcohol factory, for example. 100% is haram there. So you pack in the alcohol bottles and so on. So that's not allowed. You are working in the bank, dealing with mortgage applications, for example. So that's not jais. You are working for an arms company that's providing arms to kill innocent people, Muslims or non-Muslims. That's not allowed. So some things are very, very clear. And some there'll be some things which may be a grey area, or they may be, it might be makruh, it might be disliked, like this example, where it's not haram, but it's disliked, so try and find another job. So it depends on the company, it depends on the scenario. Not every... Most companies will have an element of haram. Just because that is the case does not mean that you can't work for them. There'll be many companies, for example, the council. The council has some interest-based transactions. They will have interest-based pensions. They will have interest-based investments. But predominantly, the work of the council is halal, so you can work there. So these are just some general principles, and for any specifics, you can ask, inshallah. Any of these halal shares. Shares are halal so long as the majority of the activity of the business is halal. So you can't invest in an alcohol company, in a pork company, but other companies, British Telecom, BT, the other companies that people buy shares in, Royal Mail, these companies, the majority of its activities are halal, and also their assets, they have assets. It's not just based on debt. It's not 100% debt based. They have physical assets. So then it's halal. And why is it halal? Because again, profit loss share. There's a risk of losing, there's a risk of profit. When you buy a share in a company, you are now a partner in that business. That is the meaning of having a share. And the day you have 51%, you are now the majority stakeholder. You are the majority shareholder. So whatever you say, you will decide. Stocks, the same. As long as you buy, it comes into your ownership. And then you sell again on the same day, no problem. You sell the following day, no problem. But it must come into your ownership. I have a business idea. What is holding me back is capital. It's a tech startup. I require a significant amount of capital for development. Sharia options for loan. Sharia compliant to get investors on board. So, look, the Islamic model, whether it's murabaha, whether it's mudaraba, is that profit share. Loss share, profit share. You have a business idea. You don't have the money, or you have some money. You need to find somebody who has money. You need to sell your business idea, and you need to agree a profit share. And that profit loss ratio, the percentage, does not have to be in proportion to how much money you've put in. It can be more, it can be less. The percentage must be agreed. That's the input. That's the necessary aspect. So for example, I have a business idea, and the cost is 100,000 pounds. I only have 50,000 pounds. So I say to Nazir bhai, give me 50,000 pounds. And because I'm putting in the effort, although the money is 50-50, but it's my effort, you are a silent partner. Okay? So therefore you will get 30% of the profit, I will get 70%. And if both sides are happy, that's fine. And then when you make your profit, 30% you give to him, and 70% you take. So that is the halal way of doing business when you don't have money. The other option is you take qardh hasana. And in qardh hasana, it's guaranteed that you have to give it back to him, even if you lose. That's the difference between qardh hasana and business, as I have already outlined. I'm not aware of any, you might have Al Rayyan Bank and some of these Islamic banks. These Islamic banks, you can use. It's not a problem. They're not ideal. They're not perfect. But if somebody wants to use them, whether it's for personal, house, mortgage and so on, or whether it's for commercial, then you can use them. Some of them might have some commercial profit share option, which you can look at. Sometimes they might put a charge on your house and give you some money. So you can look at the Islamic banks. If you receive interest from your bank accounts and you are then liable to pay tax on this interest, are you allowed to use the interest to pay the resulting tax charge? If the tax is on the interest, then yes, that interest can be the interest can be used to pay the tax on the interest, just on the interest, not on any other tax that you owe to the taxman. You understand what I'm saying? You get interest, let's say 100 pounds in your bank account. Now you have to pay tax on your other profits as well, but you have to pay tax, corporation tax, 20%, 19% on the 100 pounds, for example. So that you can, because you're paying tax on that money, so that money, that interest money, the 19%, just for that, you can use the interest money, no problem. You can't use that interest money to pay your normal corporation tax or your other taxes that you owe. With one exception, and that exception is that if the bank is owned by the government. A few years ago, I think TSB or one of the banks, the government bailed it out and took over. I think they've sold it off. But if the bank is owned by the government, then the interest that you accumulate from the government, you can pay for any of your taxes. Because the government has given it to you, you're just giving it back to the government. But if a private bank is giving you interest, then you can't. You can only give the tax on the interest, because that's just returning. That's just the tax that you've become liable to on that interest amount. Does that answer the question? Yes? Yes. Interest, it's up to you. I would suggest, as long as you are confident that you will calculate it and give it away into charity, then take it. Why let the banks profit from it? They're gonna make money out of your money. When your money is in the bank account, whether you like it or not, they make money on it. And they make a lot of money. So rather than it going to somewhere else, take the money and give it to the poor. But if you don't want to take it, then that's also fine.
Just to spin off that question, then, you know when you get a credit card and you get cash back on that, and you don't pay
It's coming. Can you kindly explain the specific rules and conditions that determine if a person who is in significant debt from purchasing their first house and shares the debt with their working spouse would be eligible to receive zakat, please? So, I've already discussed this. And husband and wife, you need to be clear. What do you own? How much gold do you have? And remember, even if it's for personal use, ladies have to give zakat on their gold. How much gold, how much money, how much of the house is yours? How much is yours? How much money is yours? If it's a shared bank account, how much is yours? You need to give your zakat. You need to calculate your zakat. You need to calculate your zakat. Money has to be separate. Okay, you might have a joint account. It's okay. Then once you've calculated and the husband says, okay, I've got cash, I'll give it for you. That is a separate matter. But it needs to be clear who owns what. Once you know that, then you decide. Then you will know whether you need to give zakat or whether you are eligible to receive zakat. Yes, it's possible that the wife gives zakat and the husband is eligible to receive zakat. It's possible. Nowadays many wives are richer than the husbands. It's possible. So that just depends on the situation. But only sometimes technically you might be eligible to receive zakat, but if you are working, you have a good income, your wife has a good income, and you don't really need it, then don't take it. Because obviously there's many people around the world who need the money. Sometimes something is allowed, but you know, and you also know that inshallah in 2, 3, 4 years you're going to pay it off, and you've just taken qarzi hasana from people. It's not that you've got bank interest. Yeah? And then also, if somebody to save you from bank interest gives you zakat money, or gives you a gift, but you know that it was charity money, or zakat, or non-zakat, whatever, then make an intention that, okay, he's given it to me today, but inshallah, I will give it to somebody else. I will give that amount in charity. Don't be one of those that we just take freebies. Al-yadul ulya khayrun min al-yadis sufla. The upper hand is better than the lower hand. The giving hand is better than the taking hand. And when you make this intention, Allah Ta'ala will make it happen. It's a guarantee. There's no ifs or buts. So somebody helps you out, very good. But make an intention, I will help somebody else. Or I will give that much amount in charity because I don't want to take anything from anybody. That's the mindset that we should have. I have some shares, some in excess of 20 years. How do I calculate zakat? I used to pay on the value of the shares. However, a few years ago, I read that zakat is only eligible on 25% of the share value. What is the correct matter? A lot of people ask about this. So, the thing that we have to remember about shares is that... Tell me when to stop. Okay. The thing that we have to remember about shares is that... Remember what I said at the outset. Zakat is necessary on... How many things? Five things. Money, gold, silver, business stock, currency. Now, if you have a business, you don't have to give zakat on everything. You don't have to give zakat on machinery. You have a shop where you sell whatever you sell. You don't have to give zakat on the value of that shop because you're not buying and selling that building. You're selling groceries in that shop or you're selling mithai. So if you are Royal Sweets, you're selling mithai, so you have to give the zakat on the value of the mithai, not on the machine, not on the building, not on the till, not on the other computers and laptops and equipment that you have. Now, you decide to buy a share in that business. You decide to buy a share in that business. Let's say you buy 100%. And you bought it for 100 million pounds, Royal Sweets. Now, you don't have to give zakat on 100 million. You will have to calculate how much is zakatable. How much stock is zakatable. It might be 5 million. So you will give zakat on 5 million. So with shares, it's the same principle. Because as I said, when you buy a share in a business, now you are a partial owner of that business. So what do you have to do? You now have to work out, okay, what is zakatable in that company? So for example, people normally look at the balance sheet that how much liquid cash do they have? Okay, do they have any reserves? Do they have any gold? Do they have any, what is the stock value? Then what are the fixed assets? Because generally on fixed assets, you don't have to give zakat unless you're buying and selling the fixed asset. So if there's a property company and you're buying and selling properties. So now some muftis have just said that as an average 25%, but 25% is no rule. It's no rule. So if you've bought share in a company, for example, which is a property company that's buying and selling properties, that's its main trade, which means that 95%, if not more, of the company will be zakat. The value of the company will be zakatable, because that's the main, those are the main assets. So now you have to give zakat on 95% of your share value in that business. On the other hand, you might have a business that is rental. Everything that it does, it buys properties, but it just buys to rent out. Now, when you have properties on rent, you don't have to give zakat on the value of the property, because you're not buying and selling the property. You might just have to give zakat on the rental income, whatever is left from it on your zakat anniversary. So it's possible that the zakat value of that business might only be 5% or 10%. So I want you to understand the principle. So there is no fixed percentage. What I normally advise people is, if you have a lot of shares, you know, tens of thousands of pounds worth of shares, then look at the balance sheet. And then maybe add 5% on, just to earn the side of caution. Some, you know, websites might even give you indexes, some of the Islamic finance websites, maybe Darul Fiqh, Mufti Faraz Sahab, others, that if it's this kind of a business, then it might be this, it might be this. Add 5%, 10%. But if you don't have that many shares, and you don't want the hassle, and you don't know what kind of a business it is, okay, then give a estimate, safe estimate, for example. For example, if it's British Gas, then you definitely know that, you know, it's not going to be more than 50%, for example. But if you're not sure, then just give it on the 100%. Especially if your shares are not that much, how much is it going to be? You know, if you just have 1,000, 2,000, 3,000 pounds, 2.5%, give it full. But the principle is that if you know, you find out how much is zakatable, then you give 2.5% according to that. Is that clear on shares? Yeah? Any questions on shares or zakat on shares? Good. Yes?
Just on the value of stock, is it zakat on stock? Is that on my cost price of my stock, or is what I sell it?
It's a tricky one, but generally, if your business is wholesale, then your wholesale price. But your price that you can reasonably sell on that day. Now, why do I say that? Generally, within the UK and within our kind of business sectors, whatever is the selling price, if we're in wholesale, then the wholesale price, if we're in retail, then the retail price, that's what it would normally and easily sell at. But if, for example, you are in a trade where the prices are always inflated, customers are always asking for discounts, and you always have to give 10%, 15%, so then actually you can knock off that 10%. Yeah? It's what you would get on that day for that item. That's what matters. Sometimes prices depreciate, prices decrease. So it's not on the buying price. Okay? It's on what you would get for that item on that day. Is a landlord allowed to take out home insurance? We have given flexibility recently for house insurance, travel insurance, medical insurance based on need, like car insurance. To drive a car is not necessary. You can walk, you can use a taxi, but there's a general need. Nowadays, with property prices going very high, with Islamophobia, other risks, then also, but not for contents, unless it's included within the premium, but not separate insurance or cover for contents, that's not allowed. But for the house, or if you are traveling, or medical insurance nowadays due to the state of the NHS, then we have given flexibility for that. Otherwise, in principle, insurance is not allowed because it's a form of gambling. Because you give money, but you don't know whether you're going to benefit from that money. But there's a general need due to the country that we live in and the environment and the consequence if we don't have that. So that's why that's been, we have given some flexibility for that. But not life insurance. Life insurance is not allowed. And contents insurance also not allowed. If it's part of your home insurance and it's part of the premium and it's part of the same premium, then it can be excused. Is zakat due on child trust fund? Yes. Zakat is due on child trust fund because it's the child's money. Although they can't access it yet, but if they were to die, then it would go to the inheritors. That shows that it's their money. Now, if they want, but after they become baligh, when they become baligh, then 1 year has to pass. Then, based on the lunar calendar, and then they will give their zakat. If they don't have money, then they can delay the zakat until they turn 18 when they get the money. But then they will have to backdate it for each year. And they will have to give accordingly. Is it permissible to use Amex? Requires annual fees, but you get rewards. If you have cash back, it's permissible. In a credit card, the credit card company is giving you money on credit. Okay? Credit card is only jaiz if you are 100% certain that you will pay them on time and you won't incur any interest. Otherwise, it's not jaiz. Okay? And therefore, I normally say to people, only jaiz if you have a full monthly direct debit with full amount. Otherwise, it's not allowed. Now, they've given you this, and now they're giving you some incentives. Why? Because they want you to use more credit, because 99% of people will default and they won't pay on time. And overall, they will end up making more money, because interest rate will be 5%, 6%, 10%. And the bonus that they're giving you might be 1%, 0.5% in the form of points or in the form of cashback or whatever it is. So that's their philosophy. But from an Islamic point of view, this is just a gift. This is just a gift. There's nothing wrong with it. Like, I give you Qarz-e Hasana of £1,000. And then I say to you, here, this is £5 for you. This is a gift for you. It's jais. Nothing wrong with it. That's not interest. Debit account and debit card scenario is different. Might be different. Because they're giving you money, or they might be giving you a reward because of the money you have with them in your account. So that will be regarded as interest and that will not be allowed. Because in effect, they are making money from your money and they are giving you some money. So then that's not allowed. Do you give zakat on the share you hold or on the dividends you receive? Dividends that you've received, if you have any money from it left on your zakat anniversary, that you have to give. And on your share, you have to give zakat based on what I just explained a moment ago, how you give your zakat. If a relative in India who has no financial means of earning money has an illness, can we give zakat on his operation and medicine? If he's poor, then you can. If he's in debt and is poor, then you can. You can give zakat to relatives, to brothers, to sisters, to nephews, to nieces. You can't give zakat up and down, usul and furu. Mom, granddad, grandmother, son, grandson, great-grandson. You can't give zakat up and down. Husband cannot give zakat to the wife. Why? Because you're responsible to look after. Can the wife give zakat to the husband if the husband is poor? Some ulama say yes, but the preferred view is that no. As a business, if I'm importing and exporting goods, is it permissible to take out insurance to cover the goods? As I said, that will be excused. Ulama in India also said that if you have a business, if you have a shop, then it will be excused. If someone is in debt in the form of mortgage or student loan, can they receive zakat? As I explained, they can. However, you will only deduct what is due or what they intend to pay in the next 12 months. Remember that about loans from banks, student loans. On when you calculate your debts, you only deduct what is due or what you intend to pay, because as I said, I'm encouraging everybody to pay more, lump sum. So if you intend to pay more, then you can deduct more when you do your calculations. So what you do is you regard the full six and regard the interest at the end. Because in your mind, interest is not allowed. So you regard the full six as the capital. And then your final payments, your final 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 payments, you regard them as interest. And those you won't deduct. Look, as I explained, that I don't allow student loans, okay? And I've given you 2, 3 solutions. But if you think that, look, it's a necessity, and you don't have any other option, and you decide to take it, then seek Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala's forgiveness, and try to pay it off as soon as possible. You understand what I'm saying? There's a whole long question here about student loan, which I think we have answered, so we'll leave that. I mean, the second year of uni, we've done that. Halal mortgage. As a not-for-profit charity, I pay myself a wage and pay zakat. However, what about the money within the organization itself? No, there's no zakat money on charitable money. Zakat money is only on money owned by an individual, owned by people. Once the money goes into a charity, then there's no zakat on charity money. Yes, the charities should discharge it quickly, but sometimes there could be delays, sometimes there could be reasons. There's no zakat on zakat, or there's no zakat on sadqah or lillah. Genuine question, how do maulanas, muftis and scholars earn their income? Is teaching enough as a full-time income? Do they have side businesses? Supplement in different way. If you are living in a Gujarati community, then don't have any hope. You understand what I'm saying? Gujaratis don't pay. They'll make, mashallah, million. By the way, no Imam of Nurul Islam or Sajideen or anywhere have complained to me and have told me to mention this. And I have not taken any money from any of these three masjids or any masjid of Blackburn, not a penny to date. Even those who offer, I don't take. And I have not taken a penny. So I have every right to speak out on this issue. We will build as a community. You know, he was asking about student loans. We will build £1 million, £2 million masjid. But we cannot have a fund for our future generation, for their education, so that they have to take student loans. Our priorities are totally wrong. Totally wrong. I'm not saying there's no reward in this. There is. But there has to be balance. What's a building? What's a building? Nothing. I visited Jami Qurtuba. Wallahi, you know, you have tears in your eyes. Jami Qurtuba in Spain. Imagine. At that time, it was the largest masjid structure in the world. And not just for 1 year or 2 years, for centuries. Masjid-e-Haram was very small until recently. Until the King Fahad expansion, it was very small. Masjid-e-Nabawi until the King Fahad expansion, very small. Masjid-ul-Aqsa, the full area is big, but in terms of the building, very small. Small building at the front, small building in the middle, and a few other buildings here and there. It was the largest building for centuries. The largest masjid building. Today you can't even perform 2 rakat salah in there. And if you try, as we try, because there's many pillars. Jami Qurtuba has many pillars, hundreds of pillars. So you try and hide behind a pillar to pray quickly. You won't even manage takbir e tahreema. They come running as soon as they realize somebody's hiding behind a pillar. So in the end, we were forced to pray on the chair because they have a chapel inside the masjid now for their Sunday service. So they can't stop you from sitting on a chair and doing ishara and gestures. So you pray on a chair. So that is our situation, unfortunately. So we need to get our priorities right. And ulama and imams need to be paid properly. I'm a great advocate of this. And ulama and imams need to do more as well. I'm not saying they don't. But generally speaking, within the Gujarati community, within the Asian community, in the UK, the situation is very bad. And not just, I don't just blame masjid committees, even Darul Ulooms and madrasas. I don't want to name anybody here. Most of them don't even pay the minimum wage. It's a disgrace. Absolute disgrace. I'm sitting here in the month of Ramadan, and it's the blessed night. It's an absolute disgrace. So many Darul Ulooms, so many madrasas. Yes, there was a time when there was poverty. If you are in India, Pakistan, you can't afford it. And even in India, Pakistan, those of you who are into charities and who are part of Chanda committees, ask them. Okay, how much did it cost to make your masjid building? How much did you... Okay, it was just £5,000, fair enough. You can't afford it. You've built a masjid for £200,000 and you are paying the Maulana £100 a month, £120 a month. So what was the need of that masjid? Some people say, well, we got a donation. Should have rejected that donation. Should have rejected that donation. So I'm saying this because some people say to me, well, you always talk about against masjid committees. I said, no, it's not just about masjid committees. It's the mindset of Darul Uloom Muhtamim's principles. Almost all of them in the UK. They don't pay even minimum wage, most of them. This is haram, not jais. And then we lie. And then that poor imam has to suffer. And then the children, that's why you see that the children of ulama, many of them are not becoming alims. Because the ulama don't want their children to go through what they've been through. So anyway, this is a long topic, I can go on and on. But somebody's asked, so now I'm saying, I'm being honest with you, it's not easy. Okay? Ulama, if you can do business, fantastic. You can get a job. MashaAllah, many ulama have good jobs now, respectable jobs in council, in business, in private sector, public sector. But generally speaking, whether it's the maktab, whether it's the, we need to up the game. That is my point. And if you are going to teach in a Darul Uloom full time, it's not going to be enough. There was a time when there was a generous benefit system. There was a generous benefit system. Now that does not exist. The muhtamims and the principals will not understand. Okay? You have to live a life. You need to get married. You need to earn a halal income. And many people then have problems. I'm not discouraging. I'm an advocate that teaching a Darul Uloom, teaching it. But make sure that you have a decent income. Everybody needs to live. And as a community, we need to resolve this problem. And people use the example of our akabir. It's nothing to do with our akabir. You look at the salary that Umar radiallahu anhu gave. I've written an article about it and compare it with today. You look at what the salary that our elders in Darul Uloom Deoband gave and Madrasatul Uloom Saharanpur gave at that time, and you compare it with today's inflation. That's why we have living wage here. The government does not want to give money. The government does not have any money. But even then, they have a concept called living wage now. That to live, you need, it's more than minimum wage. So as a minimum, we should be giving living wage as a minimum, if not more. Okay, this is done. Do we stop or carry on? Yes?
If you are a website or a company, are you allowed, if you get a customer who wants to have a website, and they sell only to haram stuff, or this way to give them the website. So imagine after the company like Just Eat, are we allowed to give them or not?
What's wrong with Just Eat? If it's something like Just Eat and you are providing a platform, a service, then that's okay. Like you have Amazon, you have Uber Eats, you're providing a service. Then you're not responsible for their actions. What they do, it's there. There might be some times where ethically you might not feel comfortable. For example, a separate matter. And now somebody's asked a very long question about Islamic finance and audit, and so that will decide. A sister has asked. Sorry, sister, but it will get very boring, and maybe on another occasion, or you can phone me, inshallah. I'm happy to go through it. Student loans, car finance. We've discussed these things. Somebody's asked about Darul Harb, that interest is allowed in Darul Harb, but it's not allowed. And if you... Not everything in the books that is written is applicable. In the books it's also written that you can't stay in Darul Harb. So you can't just pick and choose. Can you claim tax... This is a good question. This is an intelligent question. Can you claim tax relief as a high rate taxpayer when disposing of interest through a registered charity? Even Nazir Bhai is thinking, what's happening with this question? I'm picking on Nazir Bhai because I don't know anybody else's name. So, Allah Ta'ala give Nazir Bhai a long life. So somebody gives interest in charity, they're a high taxpayer, now you're claiming the tax back. Yes, because tax is a form of oppression. So you are reclaiming it in a lawful manner, you can use it, no problem. Zakat on pension scheme, as long as it's not the final salary pension scheme, it's the normal pension scheme, then ulama have two views regarding it. Some of this say you don't have to give, and some say you have to give. The cautious approach is that you give. And how do you give again? What is that investment pot invested in? Find out and determine how much of that is zakatable, similar to shares, and then give your zakat accordingly. Yes, give zakat. Because it's your money, it's an investment, it's been invested for you. Depending on who you are working for, they might be able to give you a high level average, for example, that you know, the fixed assets will be this much, the liquid assets will be this much, based on the indicators. So based on that, you might be able to gauge that, okay, it's maybe 30 to 40%, but I'll just give them 50%, for example. This is discussed. Can zakat be given to your son? No, you can't give zakat to your own son. Buying goods online where you first make payment and receive goods after, like Amazon, is jais, it's permissible. As long as you know what you're buying, everything is clear. Should we pay into a pension or should we opt out? That's up to you. That's up to you. If you think you're going to live for long, then maybe have a pension. I don't. Allah knows best. So when I was working for a short while, there was a pension scheme, I opted out. But it's up to you. If someone invests in art, watches, antiques, is this part of calculating zakat? If you're buying to sell, then you have to give zakat. If you're buying not to sell, just to keep. Some people have a hobby of watches. Your intention at the point of buying is not to sell. Then there's no zakat. Same with rubies, pearls. You know, there's many, many ways of avoiding zakat, but don't have this intention. Our teacher, Maulana Umarji Marhum, would say, Jis khuda ko dene aata hai, usko lene bhi aata hai. So you have many, if you want to avoid zakat, there's many tricks, there's many healers. Buy pearls, for example, buy rubies, buy diamonds, no zakat. Okay? That should not be the intention. So same with these watches, if you just keep it for hobby, for, and then one day if you decide to sell, that's okay. But your intention is not to sell at the point of buying, so there's no zakat. Is a wife allowed to go out without the husband's permission, knowing he wouldn't like her to go? In this country, the women rule. The Islamic rule is something else, but in this country, the women rule. So, the masala is the masala. The masala will not change. The husband's permission is required. But the husband should also be reasonable. Why is he saying no? Why is he refusing? She should also be understanding. You know, marriage does not work based on rules. Marriage, you know, people ask that, does the wife have to cook? So there was a scholar, Shamsul Aimma Sarakhsi, he has written that, because the mas'ala is that a wife, is necessary on the wife to cook. She'll be sinful if she doesn't. But if she refuses, you can't enforce it in the Islamic court. You can't take her to court and say to the judge that she's not cooking for me. The judge will say, I'm sorry, that's between you and her and between her and her Lord. Diyanatan is wajib. She'll be sinful. As long as it's within reason, she's not ill and so on. So, Shamsul Aimma Sarakhsi says that that's the rule. So you can't, it's not enforceable in court. The husband can't do anything. Can't force her. So what does he say? He says, the husband is only obliged to give her bread and just some liquid like vinegar or without the meat, without. So just give her the bread and just give her the meat because that's the rule. You don't have to give her any more. You understand? My point is that marriage does not work based on rules. Okay, rules are there. You have rules for a reason, okay, in the event of a dispute and for other reasons. Marriage has to be based on mutual understanding, mufahamat, give and take. No, okay, you know, you make a list that, no, but this is my responsibility, this is my responsibility, this is my responsibility. No, it won't work. There has to be understanding, there has to be mutual understanding. So likewise, with going out, if she wants to go to her parents, you know, it should be based on understanding. Is a wife sinful for going against a direct order from her husband to do what her parents have told her to do? Depends on the situation, depends what the parents are asking for. If the parents need khidmah during the day, then she has to go, for example. The parents are elderly, the parents are disabled, and she will go. So it depends what the issue is. Okay? But the husband does have a lot of rights. What is the best way of disposing the winnings from premium bonds? Premium bonds are not allowed. If you have it, you have to give it away in charity. Mortgage clash between order of my husband and my parents. Who should I listen to? Depends what the issue is. If it's related to your house, to your life, then you have to listen to your husband. If it's your own money, you are the wife, it's your money, then the husband has no right over it. And neither do your parents for that matter. It's your money. You want to spend it in a halal way, you want to give it in charity, you want to give it to your parents, you have every right to do so. It's not your husband's money. It depends what the dispute is about, what the issue is about. But generally, if the issue is about the day-to-day living, then you have to listen to your husband, not to your parents. And parents should not interfere as much as well. Some parents make life difficult for their children. But ultimately, it should be based on understanding. Might as well finish off now quickly. So other imams allow joining of the two salahs together whilst traveling, Zohar, Asr, Maghrib, Isha. In the Hanafi school of thought, combining prayers, Dhuhr Asr in Dhuhr time, or Dhuhr Asr in Asr time, or Maghrib Isha in Maghrib time, or Maghrib Isha in Isha time, is not allowed. That's the starting point. However, fiqh is dynamic, and Sharia is also dynamic. Where there is a genuine need, somebody has a flight to catch, Saudi Airlines, this 300 people traveling, the flight's at 12 o'clock, you're going to miss your Asr. So, now if everybody's, yes, if you can pray on the plane, I always pray on the plane. Even if the air hostesses say, no, some find a place. But for 300 to perform salah on the plane is not practical. So in that scenario, we don't need to be too rigid. Airport, pray your Dhuhr and Asr together. That's a genuine need. Likewise, somebody is traveling in the winter months, you have a train to catch at 1 o'clock from Houston, from Preston, and it's or at 1:30, and it's arriving at Houston at 4 o'clock, you're going to miss your Asr. So pray your Dhuhr and Asr. Now, of course, you can pray on the train. I've prayed on the train many times by the door. Okay, but for females, it's difficult. And even for the males nowadays, you know, you have Islamophobia, you have all sorts of things happening. So you don't need to be overly strict about it. Okay, our Allama ibn Abidin Shami and others have written, and Hakim al-Ummat and other muftis have also written. Where there is a genuine need, Marana Gangohi has also written, then you can combine between Dhuhr and Asr, and likewise Maghrib and Isha. Sometimes you have elderly people, they're traveling to London. Now they're going to struggle at the service station. How are they going to do wudu? There's no wudu facilities in most places. So in those scenarios, if they're traveling, they've left the boundaries of the town, then they can combine. I'm going for Umrah and visiting Medina first, then Mecca. However, once I land at Jeddah, I'm thinking of doing an Umrah first, then go to Medina on the same day. Do I need to be in Ihram before going to Jeddah? If you are 100% certain that you are going to Mecca first, then you must enter into Ihram before you cross the Miqat. But if you've not decided, and your intention is Medina, or your intention is Jeddah, or you're going to just see in Jeddah what to do, then you don't have to. Then you can enter into Ihram once you arrive into Jeddah. Enter into Ihram in Jeddah, or you can enter into Ihram at Masjid Aisha, anywhere in Hill before you enter Haram. But try and decide from before. My husband told me I have to ask his permission. Why are there so many husband and wife questions in the Nurul Islam area? Nazir bhai, what's happening? Nobody asks me about these, listening to husband and wife in Sajideen area, or for that matter, even in Jamia Masjid. What's happening on this side of the fence? My husband told me I have to ask his permission before I go to my mum's. This is what I've been doing for the past 2 years since we got married. Is this true? Yes, it's true, you do. Unless they need you, and it's an emergency, or they need you, the husband is saying no, but you have to do their khidmat. If you're fulfilling the rights of the husband, then you can go without asking him. But there shouldn't be a reason why the husband would say no. Okay? And as I said, it should be based on understanding. So if she needs to go to the shop, she shouldn't have to ask all the time. You should have that understanding that you need to go to the shop, or you need to go and see the neighbor. But in principle, you have to ask. Why does the husband have a higher status than my own parents? Higher status only Allah knows. Okay? This is just about living life. Am I sinful if my husband is unhappy with me? Depends. If he's unhappy with you based on a right of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala that you are violating, or his right that you are violating, then of course you'll be sinful. But if it's not, if that is not the case, he's unhappy with you because he's asking something unreasonable from you, or he's asking you to commit sin, or he's asking you to slander, or he's asking you to do something which is wrong, then of course not. So you'll be rewarded for not listening to him. There is no obedience for the creation in the disobedience of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. That is the rule, no matter who that person is, even if they are your own parents. Crypto, we've discussed, Islamic mortgage, forex. Forex is not allowed. Dropshipping generally is not allowed. Unless you appoint the shipping agent, the shipping company. If you can appoint the shipping company can represent you. You can pay the shipping company. So if the item is lost in transit, it's your loss or the shipping company's loss, which you've appointed, or the contract is with you, which normally is not the case in the drop shipping model. Then it will be allowed. Because now it has come into your liability. Remember this, that when you have to have liability, element of loss. In drop shipping, there's no element of loss. So that way it can be made halal. If you appoint the shipping company, the courier company. Or that company does it for you, but the contract is between you and that company.
So when you give a zakat on gold, is it on scrap or is it on retail value?
When you give zakat on gold, you have to give... If you're giving gold, you give 1/40 of the gold. If you're giving money, then how much money would you get of that gold on that day? 1/40 of that. That will depend according to what kind of gold is. Is it 24 carat, 22 carat? And over here we don't have VAT. In some countries you have VAT and so on. Whatever you would get, phone the bullion company, any of them. Or online you have it now. So if for 24 carat pure, normal, raw gold, the price at the moment is £74, but you might get £73, for example. Okay, so £73. Sometimes for jewelry, sometimes you might get more, sometimes you get less. Generally, you get less. Generally, unless it's something special, you might get more. So, but don't worry, the ladies know everything. You don't have to worry. Kaffara for. How do you justify ownership of shares as partial ownership of a business when shareholders have limited say? That doesn't matter, you can have a silent partner as well. Is it permissible to get a mortgage to try and become financially stable, or would it be better to rent? Try the Islamic mortgage option at Rayyan Bank, Gatehouse Bank, as I've already mentioned. It's good to own your own house. Islamic philosophy is that you should have your own property, you should have your own house. That's why the hadith says that ash-shu'mu fi thalath. That you should have your own wife, your own car, form of transport, and your own residence. Because if you live in a rented apartment, you never know. It might kick you out one day, you might have problems. So to have a house, and especially for Muslims, is good. You have your own assets. Yes?
In Scotland, it's very hard. You look at the finance houses, they're just offering £5,000 at that set. Is there any way out from him?
Allah knows best, he should have checked before moving, before buying the big house.
He bought because he's already on my yard.
Such a big decision, you should check, yes?
Why say Forex isn't allowed?
Because money, the purpose of money, currency, is not to make money. And also when you exchange currencies, they have to be instant and you have to take physical possession. Okay? But fundamentally, the purpose of money, the currencies, is not to make money. Use the currency to buy something, to buy goods, to buy stock, to buy assets. Okay? Yes. Look, I don't recommend anybody. I'm just giving you the options. Look at them. Okay? It's not for me to vouch because I don't know how their detailed systems and structures are. So I'm just saying I'm aware of a Rayyan Bank, Gatehouse Bank. Once upon a time there was HSBC. Check them. Look at their Sharia boards. Look at their Sharia scholars. See what you think. Okay. Look, there's some other questions. I think it's quite late. There's Mu'takifin as well. You probably want to sleep as well. So if anybody is here whose question has not been answered from here, then just ask the question directly. Those who are not here, the loss is yours. And those ladies who are at home, then inshallah on another occasion. Yes. Check one if there's any important one, then I'll answer. Yeah. On the last page, I think. Are you paying for the rewards or is free?
Pay £2, then you get like certain rewards for certain things, like going onto the app or going onto, so you get.
And is it in proportion to how much money you have in the account?
No, I don't think
so. Okay, so if you're paying for it, and what are you getting in return?
I think you pay like £2, you get like £5 in return. But you have to do something, you go on the app or you do certain things.
We'll have to look at the detail. And he might be allowed, depending on what you're getting in return. But if you are paying money and you're only getting more money in return, then he won't be allowed. Likewise, if it's connected with how much money you hold in the account, sometimes you have to have minimum this much, then he won't be allowed. So we have to look at the detail.
So for the last 2 years, nationwide, if you've got an account, regardless of whether you pay a fee or not, on the current account, we're giving £100 just to anybody who's got an account with it.
To open an account. You see, it depends. It could be potentially regarded as a gift, but because it's based on a debit account, and the reason why they're giving you is because you are keeping money with them.
Yeah.
So then it falls into what is called shubhatul riba. That it's not clear-cut interest, but it's akin to interest. And anything that's akin to interest must also be given away in charity. Huh? Three circles. What is the ruling in working in industries that may have haram elements, like finance, tech companies involved in AI? AI is not necessarily haram, by the way. It just depends on how it's used. So now it's there. AI is the new thing. So now we have to use it. We will have to use it smartly. We will have to punch in Islamic information, the correct Islamic information. Otherwise, all the wrong things are going to go in. So I'm not. It's a AI is like a dajjali, shaitani. It's just crazy. You might see a video of me, but it won't be me. You know, it's just they can just take the recording, just the sound, and you can just have a script and just punch it in, and it'll just, and you'll believe it. You'll think that yeah, it's me. So that's why. Video evidence nowadays is not reliable at all. You know, if somebody sends you a video, somebody's drinking alcohol, for example, you know, Mufti Sahib, Maulana, or me, you know, you just can't believe it. So we're living in that Dajjali era. You know, there's some hadiths that make reference to it as well, that there'll be so much lies. You just can't believe anything. This is the time that we live in. Anybody sends you something, you just don't know whether it's true. Sometimes news, other things. So it is what it is. But as long as predominantly is halal, you can work there. As I mentioned, as I gave the example of the Tesco. But within that company, if there is a direct haram thing, then avoid that. So for example, if you're working in a Tesco, don't be stacking up alcohol. Say to them that, look, please, I'll stack up the other things, but put somebody else on the alcohol rack. Okay? And work on the other aspects. So like that. Look, the Islamic finance one, it's complicated. If it's your first house, rather than taking a mortgage, just take the Islamic. If you get qarz-e hasana from somebody, all the better. If you have a profit share, somebody's willing to give you £100,000 to buy so that they have equity in the house and you pay them rent, and then over time you buy from them, fantastic, very good. This is also something that should be done. But people don't trust each other. So you give money, what if he runs away, what if he doesn't? But you can put it on your name. So if Allah Ta'ala has given money to somebody, then this is a scheme to think about. Somebody wants to buy a house. The cost of the house is £100,000, for example. He doesn't have the money. You have the money. So you buy the house. And then you sell it to him for £120,000 and he pays over 5 years, for example. The property is on your name. You can have a charge. So there's no risk. If he doesn't pay you, the property is yours. Generally, property prices go up. You get thawab as well. He'll get his house as well. He'll be saved from interest as well. It's a win-win situation. So for those who have money, they should think about this. I made a promise to pay 2 rakats if I committed a sin again, but I don't remember. If it was for one time or every time, what should I do? Keep praying, inshallah. It was probably for one time. Or if it was a major sin or that particular sin, I don't think it would have been for every sin. But Allah knows best. Your intention, you know better.
With that regards to student loans, a lot of the solutions you mentioned are like from a social responsibility perspective. What would you suggest to someone that's 18 and just finishing college, for example?
I have answered your question. Mm-hmm. You understand? If you have no other option and you need to take it, I'm not saying it's halal. You take it and then you make istighfar. Yeah, and you pay it back as soon as possible. As soon as possible.
No, the incentive that banks give you, you join it before you transfer from one bank to another, is that allowed to take?
It's a grey area. So better to give it away. Credit card is different. Because their intention is, the motive is different. Okay? So that's a pure gift. There's no other possibility there. But with debit accounts, there's a grey area. Some might be allowed, depending on, you know, why they're giving it to you. And it doesn't matter, even if it's £0, they'll still give it to you. You don't put any money in it. That might be allowed. Yes.
You know that one? So there's some where they incentivize you to spend a certain amount. So it's a debit account, but you don't have to put any amount in.
Yeah, but to spend, you have to put money in.
Does that fall?
Yes, not allowed.
Well,
Subhanallah wa bihamdihi, subhanakallahumma wa bihamdihi, ashhadu an la ilaha illa anta, astaghfiruka wa atubu ilayk. How long was that? No, I can carry on for another 1 hour, no problem. Jazakumullah, subhanallah wa bihamdihi, subhanakallahumma wa bihamdihi, nashhadu an la ilaha illa anta, nastaghfiruka wa natubu ilayk. Maybe next time we keep 2 sessions, so it's easily manageable.